Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell. As always, I'm joined by my sister, Denise. And for today, Sunday, October 18th, we have a great show planned for you guys. But first, before we bring on our guest tonight, we just want to remind everyone that the call-in number for tonight's show, if you have a comment or a question, the number is 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. And as always, you can hit us up on Twitter, you can hit us up on Facebook, or you can email your questions and comments to beautygirlsmedia@gmail.com, and we'll get them on the air tonight. I'm going to turn it over to Denise for Beauty.
If you hit us up on Twitter, you can use the hashtag Beauty Lounge as well as Beauty Talk. And for anyone here in Atlanta who, all my beauty news tonight is about Atlanta. So if anyone here in Atlanta attended Roshar's class, please at some point throughout the night give us a call on the show and let us know what you thought and how much fun you had. So again, for the local listeners here in Atlanta, next Sunday, October 25th at Norcosco, Atlanta, there will be a drag makeup class. It's Drag Makeup for Halloween with Mary Edith Pitts. Again, that's Sunday, October 25th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Drag Makeup for Halloween with Mary Edith Pitts, Sunday, October 25th from 11 to 3. You can join Mary Edith Pitts at Norcosco Atlanta Costume as she shares the products and techniques used to create flawless drag makeup. She has 25 years of experience as an entertainer and is also a professional makeup artist in her alter ego. This class is specifically for those interested in learning to apply drag makeup on themselves. A class for pro-MUAs interested in learning about drag makeup will be held at a later date. The class will cover basic eyebrow cover-up, foundation application, detail contouring, eye shaping and eye shadows, brow shaping, blush, and most importantly, blending. This class comes with a kit including a Ben Nye custom four-color shadow and highlight palette, Ben Nye liquid eyeliner, Ben Nye lip pencil. Students will also need to bring the following items to the class: a cream or stick foundation, loose face powder, large powder puff, makeup brush kit, number 301 eyelashes, eyelash glue, makeup remover or baby oil, baby wipes, and lipstick. They did say this class comes with a kit, right? Okay. Sounds like they're bringing more than what the kit's offered. Okay. It's also strongly encouraged that you bring a wig. All of these items are available at Norcosco Atlanta. This class will be followed by an intermediate class in July. The class fee is $100. A non-refundable deposit of $50 reserves your spot. So if you need more information or would like to register, you can call 404-874-7511. Again, that's 404-874-7511. And for those master cosmetologists here in the Georgia area, if you're interested in continuing education for 2016, COE Continuing Education is offering a fall promotion for continuing education credits. You can receive 5 hours of credits for $11. You can use the promotion code 14.00. This class is made easy, convenient, and affordable. All classes are Georgia State Board approved. Again, for more information, you can go to cosmocoe.com. That's cosmocoe.com, cosmocoe.com. Or you can call 800-795-3004. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, tonight our guest is Erica Carr. We're going to bring Erica right now. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Janice. Hi, Denise.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
You are wonderful for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel so honored.
So let's just jump right into the show. Yes, we do. Let's jump right into the show.
Okay.
Tell our audience a little bit about who you are and how you start your career.
Okay, well, I'm Erica Carr. I'm a hair and makeup artist. I'm also an educator globally. I started cutting and coloring hair way back in 1992, and I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, and I soon realized I wanted to go beyond the local mom-and-pop beauty shop. So I kind of started in downtown St. Louis, and my very first salon was all African-American hair, and I was kind of thrown right into it. There was only a hair salon that would hire me. And I really didn't get a chance to touch hair right away. I was asked to sweep, and that was just about it. And one day I was asked if I could braid, and I've always been really good at braiding. So I started braiding, and the owner came and said, "Why didn't you tell me you could braid? We're going to move you out of sweeping into braids." And so she said, "Why do you have a broom in your hand?" And I started to braid, and then I started realizing, you know, I wanted to learn on all types of hair textures. And I was asked by one of the local artists there if I wanted to assist on a photo shoot. Their assistant didn't show up, and I said, "You know, I don't know what you want me to do, but okay." And I went to a warehouse. They had clothing and makeup and hair extensions, and it was for a catalog. And she kind of told me, you know, just clean the brushes and hand me what I ask you to, and otherwise don't touch anything. And I watched how the process started, and I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. But I realized that unless you were already connected, you were kind of limited in the town I was raised in. And so I saved up a little bit of money, and I decided to pack up and move cross-country to Arizona. And I stayed with a friend of mine for a while, and I applied at Tony and Guy, UK, that had just opened in Arizona. At first, they didn't think I had enough experience, even though I had about 4 years under my belt. And, you know, they took me in for a test. I did a couple of haircuts, and they said, okay, you can go through the program. And I got into the program. They said, normally it takes about a year to get through, but I fast-tracked it in 6 months by doing all the cuts. And I decided to be a cutter instead of a colorist at the time. You had to choose. And then I went right into fashion shows. And I started keying shows right away. I didn't know I was keying fashion shows. They just told me I was in charge of making sure the look was consistent across the board and everyone was to answer to me. And that's kind of how it started.
Salon was the only salon that would hire you at the time. Did you know the reason why the other salons weren't hiring? They just didn't need help or just weren't looking for a certain skill set, or what was the situation?
I had just gotten out of beauty school, and I didn't really have any experience. And, I applied basically anywhere that would hire me, and I decided to not apply in the town I was raised in because there were about three hair salons. And it was a, you know, roller set, older women's hair that was just not very current. You know, I wanted to do edgy, cool stuff. And so I went downtown to where all the shopping districts and the, you know, the more neighborhood in the city was more like cosmopolitan and fashion forward and just neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. I really loved the shopping. And the woman who interviewed me, and she said, "Well, you don't have any experience, but we do need some of the shampoo, out perms and also sweep." And I was like, "Well, okay, I'll do anything. I just want to be around the business." And then I would watch, but, you know, she's like, "You're not allowed to touch anybody's hair. Like, and no one's going to let you touch anyone's hair." And she said, "It'll be a few years." And I just said, "Well, okay, let me just figure out what I want to do." And a couple of the girls, you know, were very sweet to me. And I did some upstyling, but I did no chemical work. I did no cutting. I did, you know, a few updos. And then one day they had this big head of extensions, and she's like, can you braid? And I said, yeah, I can braid. And she's like, well, can you cornrow? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, let me see. And I showed her, and she's like, oh, okay, well, let me move you in this department. And I said, yeah. And she said, you're really fast. And I said, well, you know, as a child, I was a very sick child. I had asthma, and I was at home a lot just watching TV and inside all the time. And I would just sit and watch TV, couldn't go to school, and I'd learn how to braid just by doing my dolls and my own hair. No one ever showed me. And even in beauty school, they were amazed at how quick I could braid. And I don't know if I just was born with that dexterity, but I just figured it out. And then I was in charge of braiding hair for all of the extensions. But, you know, that's all I was allowed to do. That's it.
But, you know, it's funny that you say that, because there are some women who work in African-American salons who that's all they do is African-American women, and they can't braid.
it's weird. It's like I can braid, you know, the tiniest hair, the curliest hair, you know, the tightest texture, and my fingers just kind of do it. And I'm also, I feel like I'm really good at teaching braids because my fingers and my brain are very connected. Also, I have a sense of urgency that's been kind of ingrained in my soul, you know, working fashion shows and having someone kind of stand over you saying, you know, you've got 15 minutes, you need these braids in now. And you just do it, you focus and you go. And I got better and better. And then I also learned some tying off techniques. I learned some roping techniques and some twists. You know, with hair that was not as kinky. And I really liked it a lot. You know, there was a lot of chemicals at the time, you know, a lot of light relaxers that weren't great for asthma. So they stuck me in another room and they said, look, here's the pattern, braid it, and then we'll sew it in. I said, okay.
So what was next after that salon? What was next? Were you feeling like, okay, I want to do more than just braid? So, you know, what happened?
Well, I packed up and I moved to Arizona. A friend of mine had a couch that she said, you know, if you want to stay here for a little bit. And I said, yeah, I got to get out of St. Louis. I just didn't see myself growing. That salon was just kind of like it had been there for 20 years. It was going to be there for another 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my friend's like, you should come out here. Everybody, you know, when they're not sure what they want to do, they come to Arizona. The energy there is different. The environment is different. And I had never lived anywhere outside of Missouri. So I had never even been to Arizona, and I never even checked it out first. I packed up my car, $500, and with a hope and a promise and just a goal. So I drove out and applied at Tony and Guy, and then finally when they accepted me and I went through their program, I realized that there was so much more to hairdressing and makeup than just working at a counter or a salon. And they really saw that I had potential. And so anytime there was a fashion show, I started out by just, you know, making sure all the looks were consistent. Then they asked me to start creating looks with the hair. And then I went through their cosmetic art training program, which they call CAT. And I went in and I learned it. But the woman that taught me, she was really interested in the way I was doing what she taught me. And then they ended up giving me her job because like, I don't know how you're doing these things. I just would hold brushes differently. I would use my fingers a lot and to create these looks. And at the time in the 90s, there was a very particular eye shape that Tony and Guy was after. And it was very square at the edge and square in the inner corner. And I kind of nailed it. And so Sasha Mascolo was the makeup key at the time and one of the owners of the company. She taught me herself how to do this look. And then she's like, you know, anytime we're on the West Coast, you should key the shows. And I did it for 5 years, and I loved it, but it didn't really pay a lot. it was okay, you know, it was fun, but it was like, at the time, I was young and hungry, and I was around a lot of, you know, Tony and Guy at the time were like the hottest thing, and their education was unparalleled, besides going to Sassoon, and I felt very lucky to be fast-tracked through it, and they, you know, I not only had a clientele, but I was working 6 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day, you know, doing just cut after cut after cut. I had also go to school for Tony and Guy twice a week. You know, when you work there, that's a requirement. And then also doing the shows. So for 5 years, I, you know, had my butt kicked and just worked, and really learned the industry and learned what I loved about it and things that I didn't like. And that was kind of my taste before I went on my next move.
Gotcha. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
You're talking about, you know, when you first came out of school, being young and hungry. How does a makeup artist and a hairstylist approach this industry as a business? You know what I mean? Like, if we're fresh, we're coming out of school. We want to do everything. We have no experience. We know nothing but what we learned in school. But we kind of want to do everything. How do we take all the information that we know and settle down and say, okay, let me approach this as a business? Yes, I don't have experience, and yes, I really don't know necessarily what I want to do. And then there are some who know exactly what they want to do. But how do they say,
right,
okay, instead of just all being fun and hair and being creative and makeup and color and all this great stuff, so how do we say, okay, let's look at it also like a business? What's our first step?
Well, you know, when I first started, my main thing was to keep a job and
mm-hmm.
not get fired because I knew there were people far more talented than I was, and they were, you know, I felt like they had more fashion sense and they were just cooler than me, and I just thought, oh, hopefully I won't get fired and I'll get to take this job. So I kind of went into it like, I'm going to absorb as much as I can from my peers. I'm going to ask a lot of questions. Now, I'm a question person, and not to the point of annoying, but I do like to ask a lot of questions because I really want to comprehend the information. And what I realized was halfway through Tony and Guy, the owner of that particular salon, she worked, you know, 50 to 80 hours per week just on the business portion of it, because she wanted to make sure that her salon was the best in town, the best customer service, the best looking salon, the best staff. And I was watching her and I realized, you know, not only am I going to have to learn the craft, but I have to figure out how to make a living here if I want to go independent. So I didn't quite learn the business part of it until I moved to my next state, which was Washington. I moved to Seattle to go to art school. And I think in the very beginning, when you're first starting out, you have to figure out how much money it's going to take for you to live the way you want to live, you know, whether you live conservatively or extravagantly. And you have to decide how much work you're willing to put in, because, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is that you have to work so hard and take everything that comes your way to make it. You know, you have to collaborate with people sometimes for free just to get pictures. You need to work, you know, 12 to 15 hour days on shoots and on fashion shows. And sometimes you work with people that you like and don't like. And you kind of have to put yourself out there in order to generate income, you know. And when you start to generate that income, you have to take that income and break it up into not only what goes back into the business, what goes into the savings, and what goes to taxes. And that, for me, took a class with accounting. I took an accounting class and slightly figured it out, but then recently I hosted a webinar on accounting for creatives, and then it really hit home. It made sense. I knew exactly how to set my business up as a DBA, an LLC, an S-Corp, a C-Corp, a partnership, and that really helped, and I feel like it helped a lot of people, you know, who are just starting out, because they say, well, what am I supposed to do? Open a business checking account and just hope for the best? Or am I supposed to set my business up a particular way? So for me, it's all about asking questions and research.
Mm-hmm. I think I recall doing some of the same things. I think asking research and asking questions kind of, I think I kind of did, those were kind of equal for me.
Yes.
Sometimes I did a lot of research before I asked the question. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of knew that I wasn't in my research, or probably wasn't going to find the answer, because some of the questions were basically related to the experience of, you know, the person that I was going to ask. But I kind of wanted to ask the question so that it didn't, I don't know what I was, I don't know if I was going for, I don't want them to think that I don't know anything, or if it was more so I don't want to, I think I was always the person that didn't want to, so many questions of the same person that they got tired of me asking questions. You know what I mean?
Right, like, I do.
You know, some people are like, oh, my God, here she goes again. Even though, you know, I guess it really depends on the person that you're asking, because there are a lot of people who are very open and they want you to come to them and, you know, ask questions. And then there are some who may be, you know, really, really busy. They don't mind you asking questions, but they really don't have time for you type of thing. So I kind of always wanted to know a little bit about what I was asking. So, you know, I was always doing research.
Yeah, but, I think it's important, you know, when you are first starting out and you are, you know, really eager and you really want to ask those questions, if you can find someone that's willing to be open to you and give you the information, you know, to a point, there's one part of it, because I tell all my students and everyone that takes classes with me, or even people that haven't, I get mail, you know, emails and Facebook messages every single day, like, you know, how do I approach the situation, or how would I price this, or I've never done this before, and I'm sorry to reach out. And I'm like, I tell people, you can ask me anything, and if I have the answer, I will give it to you. If I don't, I can recommend someone who does. And I know what I'm strong in, I know what my weaknesses are, and I'm happy to recommend, you know, say, well, you know, this person actually does, you know, this kind of makeup better than I can, so why don't you reach out to them? And I'll help them as much as possible, because I think that's important in this industry. You got to give back without expecting anything in return, and it ends up coming back tenfold, at least in my experience.
Right. And then I had accounting background, so, you know, we kind of had an idea about business and, you know, what to do. Like, we were just talking about taxes. It's funny because I was thinking about doing a Periscope on taxes, because I just, you know, I filed for an extension this year, and I just sent off my return before the deadline just the other day.
October 15th.
So, uh-huh, exactly.
I know the dates.
So that was actually the first time I'd ever filed for an extension. So I just kind of wanted to share a little bit of information about that, because we've done a couple shows about taxes and business here on Beauty Talk, but I just kind of wanted to, you know, what records to keep. Because, to be honest with you, there are a lot of people who have been in the business for a while and still, you know, they just take everything they have, big old bag full of stuff, and just give it to the accountant. But, you know, you may very well do that, but I just think it's always important to know what you're giving to the accountant, because there are a lot of people who don't understand and realize that, you know, the burden of proof falls on the taxpayer. They just think, oh, well, my accountant put this, or, you know, they put that. You know, and if something goes wrong, it's not going to be on your accountant to explain to the IRS, you know.
Yeah, you know, there's when you're doing your taxes, you know, I found out the hard way, because I had someone that was like, oh, hire this guy, he's really reasonably priced, you know, he'll do your taxes. And I just said, well, here's my stuff. And he said, okay, here, this is what you owe. And I just believed him, because I wasn't educated on the topic. And I finally, I just didn't feel like he was communicating. And so I reached out to a friend of mine, and she said, oh, you have to call my accountant, Elizabeth Hamley. And so I reached out to her. She said, well, I only work with makeup artists, hairdressers, nail techs, and massage therapists, and fine artists. That's the only type of people I work with. And I thought, oh, great. So my wife and I, for free, we sat and had lunch. I told her everything I was concerned about. I said, you know, I've got a lot of money going out. I've got a lot of money coming in. I travel constantly. I don't know exactly what to write off. And she said, oh, I've got it down. And so I gave her my taxes, and she looked at what the other guy had done. She's like, I didn't quite do it correctly. You actually owe a little bit more. I thought, oh, no, okay. And so we took care of that. And I said, you know, I would like you to do my books, because here I'm just going to be honest, I am not strong in numbers. I want to know how much money's coming in, how much money's going out, how much I can spend on maybe a new kit or a new products, or, you know, can I afford to maybe upgrade this flight, or can I, you know, how do I, when I have producing events, you know, how much money am I going to be able to spend? So when I hired her to do my books, we put a standing appointment on the books every Tuesday, 10 o'clock in the morning. We have an hour meeting with her and her staff, and they go through all of my money. And they say, here's what's came in, here's what's went out, You have this much, you know, that are going in this account and this account. And then I can say, you know what, hey, we're going to Europe. You know, can you put a budget together for me? Or, hey, I'm going to produce a, you know, class with Roshar, and it's going to be in Atlanta. And I want to charge X amount. And she'll say, okay, well, you need to sell this many tickets, and let me organize that for you. So I think it's important when people are first starting out, you know, no matter what, always sign your own checks. I learned that from Oprah.
Yes.
Do not let anyone else sign your checks. You know, hello, Joni Braxton. Sign your own checks. And then always know where your money is. I mean, sit down, make an appointment with yourself and go, okay, do I have money coming in or am I going in debt? And as soon as you get paid by something, just take 20% and put it in your tax account. So when it's time to pay that quarterly, you're not like, oh, okay, I'm behind, you know, and just do it when you first start and don't get behind, because when you're a freelancer, you think you have all this money coming in until it's time for taxes and then you don't.
And, you know, my sister and I, we mainly do a lot of film and television. And one of the things that we find is, like, there are a lot of accountants out there who just don't understand the television business.
Oh, yeah.
And I even unemployment doesn't even understand it that well. You know, so it's a real tricky situation. And the great thing about it is film and television, you know, it's just like having an employer. You get paid, you know, every week it goes through a payroll. So it's not the situation where, you know, you have to necessarily put money, you know, aside for taxes because, you know, taxes are coming out. But for
right.
those of us who work maybe in film and television where we're getting paid through payroll, and then who also work jobs where, you know, where there's a 1099 involved, and you do have to kind of put some money aside on that type of income, you know, it's important to remember to do those things. It really is.
Yeah,
so when
start it
at
early.
The year, yeah, at the
yeah.
end of the year, you don't have a big tax bill.
Yeah, and then you know, and you also know where your money's going. You know, it's one thing, you know, when I went to school, you know, you learn math and algebra and whatever, but you don't get to sit down and say, hey, when you start your own business, this is how you do it. And so, it was one of those things. If I didn't know the information, I did some research, found somebody who did, and I said, okay, please teach me. And when she taught me, I said, okay, let's do a webinar, Accounting for Creatives, so that people out there aren't confused. Because, you know, you go into it with all good intentions, and then when you really learn how it works, you might have to step back and go, oh, I actually don't have enough money to do this right now. Or, oh, you know, I didn't know you could write that off, you know?
Right, right. Exactly.
So, Erica, a little while ago, I just saw your Periscope, and you were giving some bridal beauty tips, and I was trying
yeah.
to write everything down, and then you said something about you were going to go into more detail on the show tonight, so I'm ready. I've got my pad and my pen, and I'm ready because I really want to build up my bridal business, because for years, I kept saying, oh, my God, I hate, you know, doing brides. I hate doing weddings. But yet I would get called to do, I don't know, you know, four or five a year maybe. And then
right.
it's like the more I say I hate it, the more calls I get for them. So now I've kind of like embraced it all and just like, oh, okay, I think I like it. You know, I think I'd much rather do the bride than do the bridesmaids.
Yeah.
But here lately I've been having to do, you know, both, but now when I take an assistant with me, it makes it a lot easier, and, you know, I kind of enjoy the whole process more. So let's talk a little bit about bridal, and let's get into a little bit about some of the tips you were talking about, and I do want to ask you also about contracts and what your advice would be on bridal contracts and, you know, just all that good stuff. Let's just talk bridal for a little bit.
Okay, good. This is so my element. This is what I am like. I love bridal. I've been doing it for 20 years. You know, and when I first started doing bridal, you know, this was in the 90s, and I was living in Arizona. And so when somebody would come to the salon and say, hey, can you do an updo? You know, and I'd say, well, it's going to be $50. And I thought that was just, you know, really expensive at the time. And they were like, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, my God, $50. Someone's going to pay me $50. To do an updo? and, you know, now I think like, oh, that's it, you know. But when I, you know, I teach an entire course on bridal business. I do a full webinar. It's 3 days, 9 hours, or excuse me, 4 hours each day, for a total of 12 hours. And I go through every single element in detail, whether you're in business now or just starting out and have no idea where to begin. So I pulled up my notes that I use in my bridal business webinar. So I'm going to go over some of that with everybody. You know, one of the very first thing that I ask in my webinar is three questions. Where are you in your career, whether you're starting out or you're experienced or you're a veteran? The next one is, where do you want to be? And the third one is, what's holding you back? And the two things that you can't answer with are money and time. You can always find more time, and you can always find more money. So take money and time out of the equation and just simply ask, where are you, where do you want to be, and what's holding you back? So you've got to start right there so that you can answer to yourself. Because
right.
No one else can answer that for you.
Right.
Once you have that and you figure out where you want to be in the industry, then I, you know, kind of go through different parts of the business and let people know you can do anything you want when it comes to bridal. If you just want to do makeup, you can do that. If you want to just do hair, you can do that. But I always recommend knowing both because, you know, bridal is the business with hair and makeup that will make you the most money outside of advertising as an independent artist outside of the union. So the bridal industry is in the billions. And, of course, we want a piece of that pie. So the first thing you want to know is, who is your client? Or who do you want your client to be? So if you want to work with more budget-friendly brides who have a, you know, a lower amount of their budget allocated to hair and makeup, that's one type of person. If you want to work middle class, which is, you know, let's say 90% of the U.S., you could do that. Or if you want to work more affluent brides or more upscale brides that have kind of unlimited budget, there's that type of client. That's the clientele that I work with. And I didn't start there. I ended up doing that. And it doesn't matter where you come from. You know, if you come from a low-income family, if you come from middle class, you come from money, you can work with any type of person that you feel comfortable with. So that's kind of what I let people know right off the bat. You need to figure out who your client is right away. And by doing that, you can figure out your pricing. You can figure out the type of service you're willing to offer and the level of service you're willing to give, you know, because it's kind of backwards. People that usually want discounts and that are on a, you know, very tight budget will tend to make you work 10 times harder. And that's just, you know, not everybody, but most of the time, you know
right.
what I mean?
Yes.
Okay, and then, you know, they're like, you know, can I get $5 extra off? And you got to think about, in the beginning, you don't want to just offer discounts across the board. Because once you start offering discounts, you'll be known as that discount artist. Now, if that's
right.
the type of artist you want to be, there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I have a family. I need to make a living, so I can't live on discounts. But there is a market for it. You know, some folks really prefer working with someone that is more low income, and that's fine. I'll give you an example. I have an artist that I work with. Her name is Raquel. She's fantastic. She has three kids. Her husband works at PG&E, the electrical company, and she works at the front desk. When I did a wedding with her, I said, you know, gosh, your prices are so low. You're so talented. You should charge more. And she said, you know, but I didn't grow up with people like that. I grew up blue collar. My dad and mom had to work two jobs to support our family, and that's the type of people that I feel my best around. That's like my people. So I don't want to charge, you know, exorbitant prices because I don't really get, you know, I don't hang out with rich people. That's basically what she said. And I said, oh, I never thought of that. And she said, yeah, I don't feel comfortable around really educated people or very intellectual people. I don't have anything to talk about. I just feel weird. But when I hang out with people that are just like me, I feel like I give my best service. And I thought, okay. And that's how I came up with the idea of, like, you just really need to know who your clientele is. And so when I was being raised, my dad is a plumber. He just retired for, you know, 40 years doing plumbing. And then my mom was a housekeeper for very, very wealthy people that, you know, had big mansions and homes everywhere. And she still kind of works in that sector. And so we grew up blue collar too, but I was always around people that were very educated, very intellectual, and that had a lot of money. So I gravitated towards that clientele and adapted and realized, oh, you know, it can be tough to work with them because, you know, being very particular, but I felt like I was able to give my best, and it was appreciated because I learned a good customer service and good values from, you know, my parents. So I know who my clientele is now, and I know how to approach them. And once you figure out who your clientele is, you have to think about a few things, like why should people hire you? The first question, you know, clients are thinking about, like, well, why should I hire this person? They're wondering, what is the quality of the service provider? What is the quality of the experience I'm about to have? And what is the reputation of this person or group that I'm considering? So, you know, if you don't have any experience and you don't have anything like this, you have to really prove yourself in the beginning by giving excellent customer service, excellent communication skills, getting back to somebody within 24 hours, using proper grammar when you're emailing, having a proper voicemail greeting. Those of you out there, have you checked your voicemail lately? You know, does it have a music in the background? Or does it say, hi, this is Eric Carr, hair and makeup artist. I'm able to take your call. I'll get back to you as soon as possible. You know, so all of these things come into play because just think about when you're ready to make a strong purchase and spend some cash, you want to be taken care of from the minute you inquire until the minute the transaction is done. So that's where I say start.
Okay.
You guys taking notes?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and I'm thinking of my next question. I was going to wait before I asked this question, but I think I'm going to go for it now.
Okay.
Because I did a Periscope a few weeks back on bridal and basically you know, what people are charging for bridal, and I mean, I had people from all over the country, and mostly everybody was in quite a few of us were in the same range where we were charging maybe like $300 for the bride, or you know, somewhere around $150 for the bridesmaids. And then there were some people, there was one young lady who said she was charging, I think she was charging $300 for the bride and about $100, $150 for the bridesmaids. And she said that people often tell her that she's too low, her prices are too low, and that she should be charging more.
Right.
And some people were charging, like, you know, $60 for the bridesmaids, or, you know, something like $75 or $90 for the bride, and they were afraid to go up. So, like, what's your best advice for those people who maybe they've been in the business 4 or 5 years and they're doing brides, and they, you know, they do a really good job, but yet they're afraid that if they go up and the bride, you know, the bride's
they'll
not going to want to pay the money, and then so they lose the job, and so they don't want to lose the job, but, you know, they do feel like they're worth more.
Well, what I tell people when I have an entire, you know, almost an entire day dedicated to pricing on the webinar, and I'll give you a little tidbit of it.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to pricing, you have to think about a few factors. First of all, what is your experience level, okay? And what is your reputation? Because
right.
You could have all the experience in the world but have a bad reputation, and you can't charge those high prices. You could have
right.
a very little experience but a very strong reputation, and you can charge those prices. The other
mm-hmm.
thing you have to consider is how much money you're spending and how much money it costs you to do the job. So
exactly.
If you decided early on when you're doing your business plan that, you know, it's going to take me a total of 15 hours total, and this back and forth communication with email, phone calls, the trial run, and the day of services, you got to go back and think, how much am I paying myself per hour here? Because obviously I have to make money. And what are the costs of my materials? And there's this whole formula that I give out in the webinar that no matter what level you're at, it will work for anybody. So you first of all have to think about your experience level, and you have to think about your reputation. Now, what I don't take into account, which a lot of people do, and they say, well, everybody in my market is X price. I don't think of it that way because I think, one,
right.
I don't want to be looped into the everybody else. I want to stand
okay.
out. And
right.
number two, I know my clientele is on the higher end and more affluent, and they have more disposable income, so I'm going to price myself out of the market so that I stand out to show my experience and my reputation. So I'd rather raise my price, work
Absolutely.
Less weddings, but make more money. So So I tell people, when you're ready to raise your price, don't live in fear.
Right.
Fear-based mentality is no good. It will get you nowhere. You have to take a step and say, okay, I've earned it. I have more expenses now. I've taken more classes. I've got more experience, which means you're offering more. And your value has went up. So if your value goes up, you raise your price, and you might think, but I've had 10 no's. But you're going to get a yes. And I mean, and I have, I might have to look it up while you're asking the next question. I actually have a testimonial from a girl who took one of my classes, and her name is Gwen Petty Green. She's in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Do you know, Gwen? Okay.
Yes.
She, oh my gosh, she, and I'll give you a little, because I like little stories on the side. She took my bridal business class. She lives in Oklahoma, well, she lives in Dallas now, but at the time she lived in Edmonds, Oklahoma. And I was teaching in Dallas. And she, and I said, you know, you got to raise your prices. You're very talented. You have an excellent personality. You know how to take care of your clients. And she's like, I don't know. I don't think I can do it. So fast forward, she calls me one time, or messages me, and she says, you know, I have this bride who wants 3 days of services. And she listed all this hair and all this makeup, and she wanted all these different services, different locations. And the bride's budget was very low. It was like $600. And I said, Gwen, you can't take this job. You're not going to make any money. In fact, you're probably going to have to pay her because you have all these services. And so I wrote her a proposal, and I asked her for, I think it was $1,900 or something like that. I said, give her the proposal for this much. And she said, oh, she said, there's no way anyone's going to pay this much in Edmonds, Oklahoma. I said, well, if she says no, then we can renegotiate. She sent it, and she got back in touch with me. She said, oh, my gosh. She said yes, and she already put the money in my bank account. Oh, my God, you know. And I thought, well, if you don't ask, you'll never know. And you'll be surprised because, you know, when you come back and say, hey, I know my value, I know my worth, this is my cost, and if it doesn't work for you and your budget, that's totally fine, and I'm happy to recommend someone that is. And sometimes the customer will be like, well, wait, but I want you. Okay, well, the price is this. And you wait, you know, just like when you're negotiating. It's, I'm a very good negotiator. I don't really ask people for less, but, you know, if you're going to go buy a car or something like that, and they say, you know, this is my best price, $15,000, and you say, I have 14.2, and that's all that I have. I don't have a cent more, and I could walk away right now. Okay, we'll take it. You know, it's like you have to think about how bad do they want you. And you always go for the money, you know, as far as what your value is. If you think you're worth it, go for the money. If they say no, that's okay. You can move on to someone who will pay for it.
Right. And the thing is, you never know. Maybe she was just, you know, offering just the $600 to see which, if she was going to take it. Because some people would.
Exactly. Exactly. You know? Exactly. This is how, when you're doing production out there, you know, and people say, they'll write to you and say, hey, we have a production. What's your day rate? I come right back and say, what's your budget? You know,
absolutely.
I don't need $300 because they might say, oh, well, I had $1,000 and I'm going to keep the rest for myself.
Absolutely. That's
you know, it's kind of the same thing. Instead of, I don't really ask the bride what their budget is. I just say, okay, for my level of experience, and if certain, because I provide a very different service than just your hair and makeup, this is my price, and I put in a proposal, and I put a time limit on it, a date, and I said, let me know which one works for you. Let's get going here. That's what I do.
And you know, and that's, and the thing about it is some people really appreciate when somebody does stand out. And sometimes, you know, if you're doing a proposal and you have contracts, they appreciate that. And they are willing to pay, you know, more money for that, because there are some people, there are most people don't, a lot of people don't have contracts. A lot of people will just, you know, they will allow the customer to dictate what the rate's going to be, and that's that. And, you know, they won't try to negotiate anything.
It's important. It's like, you know, if you never ask, you'll never know. And when you, even if you're, you know, if you're an introverted person, or if you're not one to, you know, because I'm an introvert, believe it or not. You know, I like to be at home, and but I do love to be teaching in front of other people, and I, you know, I love that. But most of the time, I'm kind of an introvert. But when it comes time to business and money, I have no problem just saying, this is what I'm going to need to provide this service. And if they don't like it, or if that doesn't work for them, I will provide a referral. I won't just stop the transaction there, because a lot of times people will come back and say, you know, I appreciate that you sent me someone that was in my budget. I really do. And you end up getting a client out of it in the future. Maybe a year later they can afford your rate, and they come back and say, you know, I really want to hire you. I have the money now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you, but you have to have that
you have to be confident in your work and your skill set.
Yes.
If, you know, and like you say, you know, you provide something that's a little different. And if you know that you do that, and if you know that you're talented, go for it. And just like you said, if they don't agree with it, you can negotiate or you can move on, one or the other.
Exactly. And you have to know, you know, who your client is, and you also have to know who your client is not. So if you're getting a phone call on this, you know, this bride or whoever is hiring you is just going on, and they're taking lots of your time, but they've not committed anything to you, it's okay to walk away and say, I don't think we're a good fit. Let me find someone who is for you. Because believe me, I've run into plenty of those in 20 years where you're like, I do not want to work with this person. They have unrealistic expectations. They're not willing to commit to me. I feel like I'm already working for them and they haven't committed. So I'm happy to say, you know, I actually think that we're not a good fit. It's not anything personal. But you don't want to get into a situation where you're feeling like you can't give them what they need or deserve. You know, you have to be honest with what you're able to provide this client.
Right. Absolutely. Any stories you could share about your bridal experience working, you know, in bridal makeup? That affected how you approached the bridal business altogether? Did it, you know, something that may have led you to make some changes?
I have a lot of stories. Oh my gosh, I could do a whole webinar on all my stories. I've had so many. It'll be in the book. I've been writing a book for years. I've got a ghostwriter. I send chapters every month. Well, whenever that's done, it'll probably be like War and Peace. It's so big. So, yeah, one of the things that happened to me was, I offer something called a day rate experience. And with the day rate experience, in fact, let me just pull it up. I can read it to you. And I'll read it to you first, and then I'll tell you the story. Now, when I do this, I read it up, and I have my students close their eyes and listen to what I say, and then I ask them the question afterwards. So I'll read it to you, and you can tell me what you think, okay? Personal stylist day rate experience. Imagine not having to do anything on your wedding day but sit back and relax. You would have your hair styled and your makeup applied in the comfort of your hotel suite or your own home. Your bridal party would be taken care of, and the moms and special attendants would all look their best, so your loved ones would be perfectly red carpet ready on the most special day of your life. And best of all, you wouldn't have to worry about a thing. Photos before, during, and after your ceremony will capture you and your family and friends in a range of joyous emotional moments. And to keep it all together, you could have the assistance of your own personal stylist who would work with you and your photographer to perfect the detail of every one of your photos. Is your veil straight? Is your grandmother's antique bracelet visible in the shot? Is your future partner's hair sticking up in the wrong places? These are the things I would watch for and diligently maintain to ensure beautiful photos and to keep you feeling relaxed and at ease. Do the groomsmen need to have their ties tied or their hair styled? Do the sashes on your bridesmaids' dresses need to be tied so they look all pretty and consistent? Do you need help bustling your dress while your bridesmaids enjoy a cocktail hour? Don't make them work. Let them enjoy it like you want them to, and I'll handle it. After the ceremony, you've likely kissed off some of your lipstick and cried a few tears, and you'll definitely want to look perfect before you enter the reception. So after a special moment with your new partner, I'll meet up with you again to adjust a few things. I can help take your veil out or add another adornment. I can take your hair up from up to down or vice versa. Want to change your makeup slightly for the reception? Give me 10 minutes and we'll take you to that next level. Want to change your hair completely? No problem. Need help changing into that second dress and putting on your accessories? I can make that second entrance spectacular for you. From clasping a delicate necklace to buckling those overpriced stilettos, I do all these things and so much more. Having me as your personal stylist is the icing on your cake. It was the icing on the cake for your perfect wedding. I'll take care of every beauty detail from the time I put in the first curl to the moment the very last photo is taken. And then I say, open your eyes. Would you hire me?
I'm relaxed. I'm listening to all of that.
I don't know. Yes, I would. I was getting ready to say, well, when I get married, I need to know your day rate.
So, wow. You know, the reason that I did that is because I was, I was thinking about, what happens after the hair and makeup artist leaves? What happens if something goes wrong? Who's going to take care of that? And because I educated myself in hair and makeup, and I also took home ec class, I know how to sew, I watch some YouTube videos. I know how to tie a man's tie. And I kind of know how to navigate different personalities just having worked in the industry and also being a bartender for many years. I thought, you know, what am I, and became their personal stylist. So when I had this one wedding, they had, oh my gosh, I think 15 bridesmaids or something like that. And the bride had told me previously, you know, a couple of my bridesmaids are, they like to party, they like to get their drink on, and the other ones were like real shy, and they didn't really want to wear a fancy dress. And I said, well, you have this huge train. Who's going to bustle your dress? And she's like, you know, we'll figure it out. And I said, well, and before I could even say, do you want me to stay? She said, yes, yes, could you stay? She didn't even ask how much it would cost. And so I said, well, let's work out a plan here. So we almost like a pre-production meeting. I said, how about this? You'll go ahead and get ready. I'll help you get in the dress. Well, how did I know how to put her in the dress? Well, I went to a dress boutique and I said, teach me how to do a corset. Teach me how to do the covered buttons. Teach me how to zip up and put on the girdle and all that other stuff. So I get her in the dress and I hold the train for her. I have a backpack full of snacks and water. I've got her touch-up kit ready to go, and I carry her train. I hold her flowers. I design the shoot with the photographer. Get in touch with the photographer before you meet him and say, hey, you have a stylist on set. You don't have to worry about anything except for taking pictures. Organize the train, the veil. If it's windy, I've got the top stick. Make sure you dab the bottom of the flower so it doesn't get the dress wet. Make sure she's eating and drinking, her lipstick's on point. And you help the photographer out. You help the bride out. She gets married. Afterwards, take the veil out. Nobody wants to wear that anymore. Do her hair a little bit different, maybe add some more lashes. And I just made it into an event. And I said, you know, this is like a photo shoot. This is like, if I was working with Jennifer Lopez, she's like my favorite. So I just pretend everyone's Jennifer Lopez. if you're Jennifer Lopez, what would I be doing for you? And so I take care of my brides just like I would any celebrity or any Joe off the street. And say, you know, if this was me, how would I want to be treated? And then it kind of became a thing. And the first time I did it, the bride was like, I cannot believe how much you did. And I didn't really even know you were there, but it just got done. And she wrote a review about it, and then it kind of exploded. And that's when my business really took off, because she's like, you worked the whole time. She's like, you made sure I was eating. You know, I went to Nordstrom's and bought girdle, or whatever you call it, Spanx for people. I bought feminine products for people. I went out and got them, you know, I just want a pizza. We don't want to go get it. I'll go get it. What do you want me to do? Anything you want, even outside of hair and makeup. You want me to do your nails? Go grab something because you forgot it? No problem. My wife and I actually did a bouquet for a bride because her bouquet showed up and it was dead. And she was just, you know, really heartbroken. And we went down to Whole Foods. I called my mom, who was doing flowers at the time. She walked me through a bouquet, and I remade it for her, and she was just blown away. You know, so if you're willing to just really do anything it takes to make that bride happy, you know, within reason, you can really carve a niche out for yourself in your area. Because until I started doing my day rate experience in San Francisco, nobody did it. Now I think everybody does it, you know, to a way. But I know nobody will do it like I do it.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really awesome. Hmm. It's, you know, just like you said, there's a lot of things that people don't even think about. And for the most part, most brides leave, or they'll stay like 1 to 2 hours or something like that. But, wow, that's being more than a makeup artist. That it's your personal stylist.
It's a personal stylist day rate, you know. And I always tell people, like, once you show that, you know, when I do a quote, you know, and mine's are in the thousands of dollars, and they go, oh, God, you know, that just sounds outrageous. And I said, well, let me tell you what I do. And I give some testimonials to them, and as soon as I read that to them, or as soon as I send that personal stylist day rate to them in the email, they're, like, hooked. And then I said, you know, I can't explain exactly what I do because you haven't done it yet, but every bride at the end says, now I get it. I understand why you're here. I said, yeah, if you know, tell your sister to button your and help you out, and you go to the ladies' room and she's out drinking with the, you know, the groomsmen, who's going to help you out? I know what to do here. I know how things go. I know what the order is. I've been to thousands of weddings. I said, this is what's going to happen next. You know, mark my words. Let me help you. And in the end, they're just so thankful because their families who traveled miles and miles to see this joyous occasion can actually enjoy it as a guest and not be a worker. That's my
point. Right.
Absolutely.
Now, earlier on your Periscope, you were given the tips. I thought that they were such great tips. And the very first thing you talked about was organization, which, I mean, I was writing organization, and then I had a little, then I wrote work with your, hold on, I can't even read my own writing. Work with yourself, just yourself, or with a team, and then the relationship. So can we get into that a little bit? Because I thought that was just kind of a great way to kind of, if you're looking to get into the bridal business, I thought that was a great way of just kind of breaking in and getting started if you don't know kind of like which way to go or, you know, or what to do. I thought this was great information.
Yes, and I'll start it off by saying, you know, the best way for your business to stand out is by building emotional connections with your audience, number one. Your business needs to acknowledge that selling a product or service is no longer enough. Now it's all about the experience you provide with it. So the experience is dependent on your ability to trigger the right emotions from the right audience at the right time. You know, and I'll say that part again because this will really click for people, to trigger the right emotions from the right audience at the right time. Timing is everything. So when people are getting ready to hire hair and makeup artists, it's not the first thing that they book. It's usually the last, unless you've had a relationship with your customer. 90% of the time, it's the last thing on the list and usually the last part of the budget. So when people get in touch with you and they ask you, you know, I'm getting married on this date, how much is it? That's usually the basic questions. You don't want to just send them a price sheet and hope they hire you. You have to create an experience in your communication. So when someone gets in touch with you, you have 24 hours or less to get back to them. Because I say, when the bride asks the question today, she wants the answer yesterday before she even asks you. She wants right now. So don't let it go more than 24 hours. Once you've responded to your bride with the questions they've asked, make sure you get back in touch with them within 1 week if you don't hear from them, to see if they have any additional questions. When I am giving pricing out, I ask more questions because I give my pricing in a proposal. I do not send a rate sheet. I find that rate sheets are what everybody sends. It's not personalized to that bride. And because I want to create emotions from my audience at the right time, I ask questions. So I have a questionnaire that I ask. Once I get those answers, I will send a proposal. The proposal has an expiration date on it, and so I'll send it out. They've got this many days. Once the day's almost up, I'll send them a reminder to get back to me. And if they don't come through, I simply move on. But when I'm staying organized, is I've got folders put on my MacBook, wedding inquiries, wedding trials booked, weddings that are booked. I've set it up by month. I have alerts on everything. So my phone is always having a beep go off. Hey, by the way, Stacy's trial's in 2 days. Make sure you pick up those lashes. Or beep, hey, you have to remind Evelyn because her contract is due. So I set alerts all over the place because, you know what, we're busy. We have families. We got to go to the grocery store, do the laundry, clean the house. You can't be constantly rotating your schedule in your mind because you go crazy. So let your calendar do the work for you. Put everything on your calendar and make sure you back it up. Now, if you're like me in the beginning that wasn't too tech savvy, don't rely on your electronics. Write it in a planner if you're old-fashioned. But I've got everything in the cloud, you know, so no matter where I am, I can access my calendar. So within 24 hours, respond. If you're sending out a proposal or pricing, make sure there is an expiration date on that. Let them know. My favorite thing to say is prices may be adjusted based on demand. You know, you might do a price quote and say, okay, a week later it might go up because you might have six people, you know, having a bidding war for your services for that day. Who knows what's going to happen? So put an expiration date on it. And then once your services have been completed, whatever it is, trial run, whether they've hired you or not, and after a service, you send a handwritten thank you note to them, thanking them for their business. So before I even leave for a wedding, I have this thank you note envelope written out with their address and stamp on it so that as soon as I get back home, I can sit down and go, man, that was such a great speech that her dad gave. And I could write down and say, you know, dear Jana, your dad's speech was epic. I loved hearing him talk about when you were a kid. And thank you so much for including me in your special day. I had an amazing time. Enjoy Tahiti. I'll talk to you soon. You put your business cards in and you mail it off so she has something to look forward to when she gets back, because the more you're putting your brand in their hands, the more apt they are to hire you for future services, and that's how you build a clientele.
Right. Hire you for future services and refer you as well.
Yeah, and there's no shame in asking for a referral. I mean, if someone likes what you did and you send them a thank you note, just say, you know, if you have any friends or family that are in need, please send them my way. And if they send you three people, then, you know, invite them in for a complimentary makeup or hairstyle to thank them. Or if you want to get them a little compact or a hair, you know, hairspray or something like that, whatever you've gotten to know them and or whatever they like, it reward them in some way. Give them motivation to send you people.
Right, absolutely. And so it's the bridal work, is that something that you love to do most of all the things that you do?
I do, but I also really love to do production. You know, put me on a set with a photographer and some models, and I'm mm-hmm. just like in my element. You know, I just got done shooting in Calgary and Alberta. I was shooting in Australia with an amazing stylist and makeup artist, Deborah Kelly, who's originally from Melbourne, Australia. And right now she's living in Calgary for the next few weeks till she moves back. And she makes these amazing paper dresses, and she created designs. And we went in, you know, and kind of worked on the look together. And as soon as I stepped on the set, I was like, you know, so it's a nice break in between season and doing bridal is to do, you know, shoots and stuff like that. And those are my two favorite things. You know, I've done TV, I've done film, and I've done runway, but working on a set and, you know, really doing everything. I think that's why I like bridal, because I get to do everything. I love
mm-hmm.
it.
Nice. Now, you mentioned doing the hair and makeup. What kind of advice would you give to makeup artists who aren't hairstylists, you know, who want to do brides, and you're suggesting that we do both hair and makeup? For those who don't plan on going to cosmetology school.
Okay. Well, the first couple things I think about is, you know, the more services you offer, the more value you offer for your potential customers. Because a lot of times people go, oh, you don't do hair and makeup? Okay, well, I'm going to find somebody who does both. Because the last thing you want your bride to be worrying about is if two personalities can get along. You know, if a makeup artist comes in and they don't have your same level of experience or expertise, and you come and do hair and the makeup is kind of like, not up to par, it's not going to make anybody look good. Even if the hair looks amazing, the makeup's not going to look good. The whole thing's a disaster. Vice versa with the hair. So I tell people, if you want to style hair for weddings, first of all, check your state law, wherever you live, whether you're in the U.S. or Canada, and find out if you're able to do that. It was a big controversial topic for a while, like, oh, you're not licensed, you can't do hair. Now, some cities and some states, like I live in California, if you're doing hair not in a salon and you're doing it for a production, and that means if a photograph's being taken or if a video's being filmed, hello, weddings, you can do it. Now, some states, like South Carolina, you cannot do any hair unless you have a cosmetology license. Now, depending on who regulates that, I don't know, but what I've heard in South Carolina, they're pretty heavy with regulations because they're little small towns everywhere, and they've got a lot of people to regulate this law. California does not have a lot of people to regulate this law. Now, other states, wherever you plan on practicing hair, be sure to check your state law and make sure you understand how that law is interpreted by the state before you go into any sort of hair training. Now, if you're in the clear, you're able to do some hairstyling for weddings, production, film, TV, whatever, then I would say take a hairstyling class. I happen to teach a hairstyling class for beginners. I do a 3-day beginner class, and then I do a 5-day, which is beginning to advanced. And I've been teaching that for many, many years, you know, over 10 years. And I took it on the road going on 3 years ago, by a request from someone in Dallas, and it just exploded. So now I've got a lot of makeup artists out there that are styling hair for their weddings. They're making more money, and they're just becoming more creative with their photo shoots and their portfolios. So if you really want to do it, check your laws, get the proper training from someone that is a good educator, mm-hmm. that has patience, and that you will have follow-up abilities after. Like for my students, we have a secret group on Facebook called the Alumni Hands-On Hair Group. If you've taken the class, you're automatically entered into that. That way you have support for the length of your career, and then you're able to retake those classes for only $100. You know, the classes are pricey, they're in the thousands. If you invest in the class, you can retake it as many times as you want for $100. And we always give support. So if you say, well, I don't really know how to do this braid or how to approach this look, or what would you tell someone that doesn't have the right hair texture? We go in, and myself and a couple other stylists will go in, and we'll give you a step-by-step breakdown so you never feel like you're alone.
Mm-hmm.
So we take care of them.
That's nice, having that follow-up group. Now, speaking of education, let's talk a little bit about some of the classes that you offer.
Okay, cool. Love that. Well, what I have on the books right now, I just pulled up my website. So I do the bridal business intensive webinar. So for those of you that are looking to get into bridal, or if you started doing bridal but you want to take it to the next level, you're not really sure what to do, I go through a lot of these topics and more over 3 days, 4 hours each day. And it's coming up January 5, 6, and 7, 2016. You can go to ericacarclasses.com and look for the pricing and the information on that. And we go through I'll tell you the topics we go through. Branding, finding your client, marketing, booking brides for both hair and makeup, contracts and communications, questions you should ask your bridal party, cultivating vendor relationships, maximizing the bridal beauty dollar, timing, secret product equations, accepting credit card offers, negotiating, retainer deposit requirements, maintaining your space, offering a day rate, setting yourself apart, bridal fairs, competition, practice, wellness, and so many other topics. And then they receive 10 documents when they take the webinar, including a 9-page contract. It is Contract California, but all the topics in there can be customized for your state laws. So they get that for free among 9 other documents. And then I also have the Bridal Business Part 2, which is proposals, persuasion, and pitching. So when you are going to pitch your brides, you will know exactly the type of language to use. So proposals, pitching, and persuasion, it follows the Bridal Business Intensive Part 2, and that's in January as well. And, you know, you'll talk about how to write a proposal, what is it, how to write an effective one, when to offer it, words to use, how customers see you and your brand, and also persuasion, powerful things you can say and do to plant seeds that will lead to your sale. You know, if you're constantly getting brides to say no, find out why. And also when to push and when to walk away. And then I also have Brooke Shar, of course, who's in Atlanta right now at Authentic Beauty and off Roswell Avenue in Atlanta. I produce events for Roshar in the U.S., and we're going to be going global next year. So his classes are on my site. And then I just released 2 new ones, which is SEO, 101 for creative, so that's search engine optimization. So if you have a website out there and you don't know what SEO is, or you're not sure where you rank, this is something great for you as well. So I've got a top-ranking Google executive. You know, I'm in Silicon Valley, so I have access to Google. They're going to be online live in this webinar telling you exactly the keywords you need and things you have to have to get your website to pop up in the first page, in the first 5 searches on Google, Bing, and Yahoo. So it's going to be an amazing one. That's coming out November 5th. And then I've got 7 Days of Beauty. So I've partnered with Jesse Powers, who's the international global educator for Makeup Forever, who's been with the company for 12 years. And she and I will be going to Denver in April and Indianapolis in March so far.
So
those
are
the ones I have on the book.
So is that also a service that you provide through Erica Carr Beauty, is producing events for other artists?
Yes. So, you know, one of the things that I love to do is I love to learn. And, you know, I reached out to Roshar about 1.5 years ago, almost 2 years ago, and I had him come to my salon that I had in San Francisco. And I said, you know, can I bring you in for a class? And what are your requirements? What is your rate? And he's very, very easy to work with, just a gem of a client. And he told me, I said, okay, let's do this. And I didn't know how he kind of did things. So I asked the questions. And I made sure he was very well taken care of. And then I asked him for follow-up, and he said, you know, you really took care of me. I liked working with you. I said, cool, can we do another one in Seattle? And he said, okay. And that kind of went through, okay, can we do another one in the city? And we've just been doing classes all over. And, you know, putting an event together is something that I've kind of been born with. I have a forte to just organize everything myself and reach out for help on things I'm not good at. And so producing events for other people is something I love to do. That's why I'm doing the SEO thing. I just also am doing something with Rocky Cosette and Cosette Brushes. We're doing a webinar in November about his brushes. And I just think, you know, a lot of people want to know about brushes. I see it in the group. They're talking about it. I said, I need a class on that. Let's do it. SEO comes up. Okay, we need a class. Let's do it. So I'm not the expert on it. I just find someone who is and say, let's do a class.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Let's do
right.
it. What do you charge? Let's do it. And, you know, I've got one coming up about bridal about working on bridal teams. You know, I've got Brett Dorian in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I've got Christy LaValle in upstate Massachusetts who run huge bridal teams, and I'm going to be doing a webinar with them in February and about people working on teams and leading teams. And then I'm just going to start working with Kimberly Jones, Chris Malone, and Jessica Badia. We're doing a webinar on union, what it's like to get into the union, what you need, what it takes, why it's a good idea. We're doing that in 2016 as well because, you know, I follow these topics online. I see what people are talking about, and I'm like, if people want to know, well, let's give them the information. Let's do it on a webinar.
Right.
Let's do it.
Right.
And do you have a date for that November webinar with Rocky?
I do, and I believe it is November 17th. Let me just pull up. I think we're going to announce it on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yes. So November 17th, Rocky Cosette, we're going to be going through every single brush in his line of, you know, what he likes best to use with what products, powders, creams, working with vegan bristles. He's going to actually do a demo on the webinar and show what his brushes can do and the handles, the colors, the intent behind it. You know, and for those of you that don't know Rocky, if you go to Cosette.com, C-O-Z-Z-E-T-T-E, he is just a phenomenal human being who happens to be from the Bay Area, and he's based in New York.
Right.
Now, but I mean, he is just like an amazing spiritual human being. He's very intellectual. He's worked with Pat McGrath on Fashion Week all over the world, and he's just the nicest guy. And we have a really great connection. And I said, you know, I love your brushes. I'm obsessed with them. Can we do a webinar? Because people are like, what brush would you use for this? What brush would you use for that? And they're like, well, he's going to tell you. And then he's going to offer a very generous discount on the webinar as well.
Now, you know, I think when I first heard your name, you were doing classes with KJ Bennett, and I knew you did hair. And so I always thought when you all did classes together that you were doing the hair and he was doing the makeup. But then I don't know when I realized, I guess just recently, that you did makeup as well. So I was kind of shocked. Like, all this time, I didn't know that you did both hair and makeup.
Yeah. I've been doing makeup since 1995. And, you know, I've kind of done it off and on my whole life. And when I started to build my portfolio, I realized how important it was to do both hair and makeup. Because I wanted to show that I was very versatile. So, you know, I do have my creative director of my company and it's been my assistant for 5 years, Kaylee Lorenzo, who's a fantastic makeup artist. So sometimes when we do shoots for portfolio, she'll do makeup for me. But a lot of times I do it myself. And I've taught makeup for years and years. But, you know, when you have someone that's got an amazing legacy or that has an amazing set of skills, I'll bring them in and have them teach makeup and me do hair, and we'll just collaborate.
Right.
That way I can learn too.
right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What do you think is important for a makeup artist and a hairstylist who's looking for makeup and hair education? What should they be looking for in a class or in a school?
Well, you know what, I've got great notes on this. I'm scrolling down to find it. So when it comes to finding education, you know, the first thing I say is education destroys fear. It ignites passion. So be a student for life and accept the challenge. There are a few easy paths up a mountain, and often they're hard to find. And challenge will be an essential piece in any type of success in business. So when it's time to find the right educator, you want to, number one, you want to look at their reputation. You want to find out, have other people gained knowledge from this person? Have they been treated fairly? And has the investment they've made been worth it to them? And don't just ask one person and don't ask your best friend, but ask other people. And you can go in groups and you can find out what people have to say. You can look online, look on websites, you know, whatever it is, and find out about these folks. Now, the thing for me is to make a connection with students is I have the patience of a saint. That's what I've been told. I don't claim to say it myself, but, you know, if someone doesn't understand something and it's just not computing, I will show them again and again and again until they get it, and we don't move forward until everyone's on the same page because I want everyone to get it. So you have to have patience, and you have to have an educator with patience. You want to make sure your educator never treats you as if you're less than and is never condescending to you in the way that you're spoken to, and that they have an understanding soul. You know, if everyone learns differently, and everyone, some people are dyslexic, some people are very quick learners, some people are more book learners, some people have to see the hands-on and then practice it immediately. Some people like to take videos, some people like to take notes. So really in-depth ask questions. I have a girl who's a student of mine, her name is Janine Webby. She lives in outside of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and she's going to take my 5-day hands-on hair class, and she called me. And she said, you know, I just want to have a phone conversation with you, have some questions. And she grilled me for like 45 minutes, asking me every single part of it. And I thought, you know, this is great. I want you to ask me these questions. I want to know that I'm providing what she's expecting so that nobody leaves disappointed. And I always ask for follow-up afterwards. I always ask people, is there anything I could have done better? Is there something that you didn't like or something that was done you didn't expect? Or, you know, you tell me. And that way I can always make my class is better. And if your educator is open to that and they're open to helping you after class, then it's time to make that investment. You know, there's a lot of people out there offering classes. There's a lot of camps out there offering classes that just want to make money, and they don't care about the results in the end of the day. And for me, I tell people all the time, I'd do this for free if I could. I love teaching, and I love getting people pumped and amped and ready to the next step in their life. Whatever I can do to facilitate that, I will. So before you make an investment in anything, do your research and make sure that that person is the right match for you. Call them up and talk to them. Ask them. And if you get that good feeling in your tummy that says go for it, then do it.
Right. Right. Social media. How has it helped your brand?
Oh, boy. Social media. Huge. Huge. Social media is huge. You know, in the beginning, I thought I had to be part of every single group out there that was discussing education and makeup and everything like that. And then I realized very quickly that, you know, not all groups pertain to me. Some groups were very education-based, and some groups were kind of, you know, crabby and bickering, and my opinion's not good enough and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, I want to start my own. So I am an admin for the group Makeup Artist Talk for Pros and Aspiring Pros. And I also have my own group, Erica Carr Global Education, that is a secret group. I add people to it if they'd like to join. And we have lots of great topics on there, and people share their classes. And then we've got the Makeup Artist Workshop group. So I do try and get on and ask people when they're stuck, when they need a push, when they need help. And then we'll try and do a Periscope on that, or we'll try and do a class on that. But, you know, being around social media and having people talk about the classes they've taken from me has just exploded my business. And I just can't say thank you enough for my students. They always talking about it. I love it.
What's next?
Well, we did, you know, tap into the global market. We did go to London and Dublin and Melbourne and Auckland, New Zealand. And, you know, I think what's next for me is offering more in-depth classes and more specific subjects on a global level, and also providing more webinars that will show technique. And I am going to be doing a webinar with Roshar in 2016 where he's actually going to do a start-to-finish demo where we'll be able to ask questions, and we're going to talk about technique and product, and we're going to show people that maybe they can't leave their home, maybe they can't afford it, maybe they're just not ready to go take an in-person class. They don't have the means or whatever. They just live in another country. And I want to be able to hit everybody wherever you live, whatever your means are. I want to be able to provide education for people. So my main focus right now is teaching.
Well, I'm excited about it. You have a lot of stuff coming up.
I do.
And speaking of that, you know, having such a busy schedule and traveling classes, how do you find balance with your life, that you were married, your life, your career? How do you find balance?
You know, I love to travel. And I work hard and I play hard. So what I do is I make sure that I set aside time for myself and my wife at least once a week. So people that are taking on a lot of, freelance work, or they're just starting and they don't realize like how much it takes, you really have to set an appointment for yourself. So I talk about that in wellness. If you aren't able to set aside time for yourself, you're going to burn out really quickly. So think about the things that make you happy when you're doing them. So, for instance, 3 to 4 days a week I go to a kickboxing class. When I'm in kickboxing, I've got my hair in a ponytail, no makeup on, I don't talk about business. I'm there to make sure that I don't kick anyone in the face and I don't get kicked. So my focus is totally separate, good workout, and I get to clear my head. I don't sit and just repeat things in my head over and over again about, you know, business. I make sure I spend time with my dog and my wife. And when we, at the end of the season, and even mid-season, we like to go to Hawaii. So, you know, we're 4 hours from Hawaii, from Maui. It's where we go. So we'll go to Maui, but we'll go for like 3 or 4 weeks. And we just completely tune out, get off the grid, and enjoy our friends. Go for a paddleboard, get in a canoe, hiking, cooking, and just really visiting with our family there. And, I keep up what's going on, and I do work a little bit, but I make sure that I, you know, get my time in the ocean, I get my time exercising, and, I turn off the computer, and I turn off the phone, and I have eye-to-eye contact with my wife, with my dog, with my family, with her family who's here in San Francisco, and we have conversations instead of texting each other. And we talk, about things that have nothing to do with the business, and then I feel refreshed and energized and reinvigorated to do it again. But you have to take a break. You've got to shut that computer down and say, okay, I'm going to watch The Walking Dead or American Horror Story or whatever your show is, and say, let's watch 3 episodes and eat dinner together and have some dessert and talk about tomorrow and just enjoy each other's company. And that's kind of what we do, because there for a while, you know, we sat down and she's like, you're working too much. We need time. I said, you know what? You're right. And I felt frazzled. And then we decided, okay, every couple of months we go away and we have a little break together. So it's important to take a break, especially if you have kids too. I mean, your kids need your eye-to-eye contact. No iPad, no phone, no computer. Eye-to-eye. Go play ball. Go toss the ball around. Draw pictures with them. Do something else outside of what you normally do, and you'll really learn how to balance.
Nice. Has there ever been a time where things were slow and, like, really slow? And have you ever considered, okay, I want to do something different? And if so, how did things turn around so that you could get to a better place?
Yeah, you know, when I, after Arizona, I moved to Seattle to go to art school. After Seattle, I moved to New York City. And when I realized New York wasn't for me, I moved back to the West Coast in California. And when I came back here, you know, I realized I had to start my business all over again. So in the beginning, I couldn't get any customers. You know, I didn't have my license in California yet. And I was just like, I can't make it as an artist. I need to do something else. And so I started bartending. And I started to wait tables, and I learned about the food and wine industry, and I got a really clear perception about the type of people that live here, the type of incomes people have here. I learned a lot about how to handle customers and customer service, And then I started to get to know people again. And then, you know, people would always comment, oh, your makeup looks really good. Oh, I do makeup. Oh, you do. I have an event coming up. And it just kind of like started over. And so I just was always around people, always getting out there. So, you know, one of the things I learned very early on is that no matter what's going on in the economy and with the recession and whatever, if you've bartended, waited tables, or done hair or makeup, you'll always be busy because that's where people will spend their money when they don't have any.
Right.
They'll get a drink and they'll look pretty.
Right.
Absolutely. All right. And last question, what is beauty to you?
Beauty to me really starts with someone's heart and how they treat other people and listening and really giving your all to somebody else. You know, I think that's really beautiful. It's not really the aesthetics for me, besides Jennifer Lopez, of course. She's like perfection, and Beyonce too. But besides that, having a beautiful soul, a beautiful heart, and really trying to be kind to other people and to be very giving. That's what I think beauty is.
All right. Sounds good to me. Share your website again, how people can contact you, and all of your social media, where you are on social media.
Well, ericacarr.com is my portfolio site. Ericacarrclasses.com is that if you want to take a class. And, you know, facebook.com/ericacarr. And then Erica Carr also on Instagram. And then if you want to follow me on Periscope, it's at Erica Carr Beauty, which is the same as Twitter. And I do scopes, you know, about two times a week, usually one on bridal business and one on, you know, gaining confidence or whatever. I kind of take little bits of my webinar and I talk about it. But if you wouldn't mind, before we go, I have something that I read to all of my students at the end of our webinar. And it's something I have framed and printed in my house. It's called the Whole Sea Manifesto. And it goes like this. This is your life. Do what you love and do it often. If you don't like your job, quit. If you don't have enough time, stop watching TV. If you're looking for the love of your life, stop. They'll be waiting for you when you start doing things you love. Stop overanalyzing. Life is simple. All emotions are beautiful. When you eat, appreciate every last bite. Open your mind, arms, and heart to new things and people. We are all united in our differences. Ask the next person you see what their passion is and share your inspiring dream with them. Travel often. Getting lost will help you find yourself. Some opportunities only come once. Seize them. Life is about the people you meet and the things you create with them, so go out and start creating. Life is short. Live your dream and share your passion. My favorite.
I love that.
I read it every day.
You know what? And that is something to be read every day. Sometimes we need those reminders because we get so caught up in trying to be something or to do something, and we just kind of miss all the important stuff.
Exactly.
I really love that.
Thank you
so much. I really appreciate that, you reading that, and appreciate you being on with us tonight. There's so much more that I could have asked, but I think what I'll do is we'll wait about a month or two down the road, and we'll have you back on when you have some free time.
Okay.
For part two.
I would love that. Part two. Yay.
Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
Thanks, ladies.
All right.
Okay, have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys for joining us tonight. We really appreciate your continued support on the phone line. Thank you guys for listening in. And for those who may listen on the playback, thank you so much for your support. We get a lot of playback support. So thank you. Continue to listen, and we will be back next week. And I try not to say too much anymore about our guest who's coming up, because sometimes at the last minute it may change. So I just kind of wait till, you know, closer toward the end of the week to start sharing that information. So that's why I'm not saying it now. But join us next week, same time, same place, and we'll do it all over again. Thanks a bunch. Have a great week and have a wonderful night. Good night, everybody.
Yes, good night.